And the question that Arden so eloquently said we cannot possibly answer is, what do they do on July 31st, which is the trade deadline, because we have no idea where they're going to be. But the larger question is, we know this team was built to win. This team was built to get back to the playoffs for a third straight year. We believe that ownership has woken up to the fact of, hey, a really good team makes us a lot of money. So the question is, and I guess I'll start with Steven here, regardless of whether the Blue Jays are 50-50, 45-55, or 55-45, this is a group that needs to still be aiming towards winning. You cannot blow the thing up and wait 5 years to have another good team around here.
Well, I don't – they're for a bunch of reasons. Number one, it's not really set up that way. It's not set up for a kind of a quick teardown turnaround here, because – There's a gap in the farm system still between major league ready talent and the major league team. And there's some really exciting players that people are starting to talk about, Vladdy Guerrero or Reese McGuire or Dan Jansen. You got three catchers, Reese McGuire, Dan Jansen, and Max Pentecost, or Connor Green or Sean Reed Foley. But those guys, you know, Vladdy Guerrero Jr. is 18 years old. So in baseball, it takes time. So the notion of kind of, okay, we're going to do a teardown here and we're going to go the Houston route, they're not really positioned to do that, and I don't think ownership – this is a team that draws extraordinarily well. There were 2.5 million tickets sold before this season started. The television ratings, even during this very strange start they've been through, have held. Again, it's not telling tales out of school, but Blue Jays games this year head-to-head beat Raptors playoff games. And that's with a team at that point that was bad, right? So this team, you know, that's 162 games that all do very well, and if this team is better, they do even better. So, there's a reason to kind of try, and the team is built to win now. So I don't think they'll mortgage the future at the deadline this year, because I don't think that makes sense either. I don't think they'll do anything radical like they did 2 years ago. But I don't really see a teardown here. Look, if they're out of it, yeah, they'll sell some of the guys who are at the end of contracts. So they would look at moving a Marco Estrada for value, or Liriano for value, or some of those kind of guys. I don't think a Donaldson deal. I don't think they'll do it unless there's something crazy out there. But I think what the more likely scenario is that this team, it's hard to fall out of the wild card race when there's all with the extra wild card. It really is. So I think they will be in it to some degree in July, and they might make some minor moves around the edges. But I think, if the team gets healthy, I think that they'll ride that pitching rotation, and which is still, I think, the best pitching rotation in the division, and see what they can do. And in terms of ownership, yeah. Look, I do think when Mark Shapiro arrived here, what he said was true, and people didn't want to hear it, which is, I just inherited an old team, and the farm system was depleted in order to make the deals that brought David Price in and brought Torey Tulowitzki in, and to a lesser degree others. You know, like 2/5 of the Detroit Tigers rotation right now are Daniel Norris and Matt Boyd, who are two of the players that went out in the Price deal. Jeff Hoffman is now part of a very good young rotation in Colorado, and is just starting to feel his oats. He's the main piece in the Torey Tulowitzki deal. They gave up a lot. And Mark Shapiro said that. People didn't want to hear it. But, you know, really, the fallout from those deals and the fallout from what happened afterwards, which is, you know, A, they got to the postseason twice in a row, but B, this crazy surge in interest and surge in revenue, I think all of that tells you that it's a tricky road to walk for this team. You know, how do you – because they are old. But I think the road will be try and hang in, see what you have when it's healthy, make some moves around the edges. I don't think Mark Shapiro wants to do what he had to do in Cleveland. I also think it's a very different situation in terms of ownership.
Yeah, you know, they started this off season by saying they wanted to get younger, more athletic, and more left-handed in terms of hitting. They didn't really accomplish any of that. Kendrys Morales is a switch hitter, so you can maybe give them credit for that. And I asked someone about this a month ago in the organization, you know, after I'd said that basically you didn't accomplish what you wanted to do in the off season. And his response was, well, what makes you think that we're still not looking in season at doing that? So my sense is that I don't think as many options are off the table as a lot of people think they are. If they can make a deal that makes them a little younger and doesn't damage them too much in the short term, in other words, if they can trade somebody for a left-hand hitting outfielder who's, you know, in his early 20s, plus a pitcher who's going to help them right now, I have no doubt that they'll do it. And I, you know, tonight, no. But would they do it in late June? Absolutely. Like, they want this team to be younger when they start next season. Some of that's going to happen as a result of guys leaving as free agency. But they will, if the right deal is there, I'd throw in a name, Michael Conforto, which isn't going to happen. But that type of player, they would absolutely make that deal.
And they can also take payroll, right?
That's, and they can take payroll.
In the manner of the Liriano deal last year. But, you know, the other thing is you can't, you know, we talked about that. Yeah, the goal in the offseason was to get younger and get more athletic. You can't get younger through free agency.
You can't through free agency. You have to do it by trade because
free agents aren't young.
Free agents are old now. Yeah. Nowadays, they're old guys who are sort of in the end of their career. Now, that's going to change in 2 years when you got Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, and you know, basically anybody who's anybody is a free agent. But, yeah, if you're going to get younger, you can only do it through the draft. That takes 4 or 5 years or through trade. So I really believe that everything's on the table for the Blue Jays. But I don't think there would be a teardown.
So that teardown's not on the table. Everything else.
No, I mean in terms of trades for younger.
Yeah,
to get younger,
as long as they're not getting worse.
Yeah.
For 2017.
And somebody may make that deal. You don't know.
What's interesting is that you talked about the free agent class. There's a huge free agent class after the 2018 season. Manny Machado, Bryce Harper, Josh Donaldson, Clayton Kershaw, somebody else who's awesome. I can't remember who. Supposed to be Jose Fernandez, but that's not happening. But as soon as you said that, I thought, yeah, but the Jays don't swim in those waters. And then the thought occurred to me, well, wait a minute. As everyone knows, they have the richest individual ownership in the game. But we don't expect them
to.
They don't? Second richest?
Washington Nationals.
Okay, second richest. Sorry.
Sorry, but it's true. Just want to make sure, you know.
Yeah. But they don't swim in those waters, and I certainly don't expect them to be in on any of those big-time free agents.
Maybe not at the absolute top there,
right,
though, Mike, but
there's
a lot of other guys.
But why not? Why not get in at the absolute top? They're not all horrible deals.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them wind up being terrible deals. But I don't think it should be just an absolute given that they're not going to be doing it, even though it feels that it is.
It is up to the player, though.
Right, no.
Yeah, but I mean,
get into serious negotiations and say this is our targets are the best guys on the
but
market.
But let's also keep in mind that, let's say we're talking about a person like Bryce Harper or Manny Machado.
Sure.
We know that you have to pay a premium to get a player to come up to Toronto. So Bryce Harper is not going to take the same amount of money from the Blue Jays as he would take from the Yankees. So are you willing, instead of paying Bryce Harper, what, $35 million a year? Are you willing to pay him maybe $40 million a year?
I don't think anybody's getting him for 35.
My point is, Russ Martin didn't cut the Blue Jays a hometown discount.
Good Canadian boy.
Man, good Canadian boy. He got more money.
He held
the Blue Jays up. He got an extra year. So, yeah, you can fish in those waters, providing you're prepared to make that player the highest paid player in baseball history. I don't see that happening.
Harper's going to be the highest paid player in baseball history.
Yeah,
regardless.
But I don't. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if the Jays would make that call.
No, I don't think they would. I don't think they would. But staying away from that, because that's too much way, way down the road stuff. There's a lot of immediate stuff. And immediately, the Texas Rangers are in town. Tomorrow night, Donaldson Tulowitzki are going to be back, we believe. Someone said they should just
Bannister,
put him in bubble
Hell's
wrap.
Hitting coach will be here.
Yeah. Jeff Bannister.
Yeah.
Who, one of the Blue Jays coaches told me that he's one of the Jeff Bannister is one of the worst human beings that he knows.
When they had that brawl in Texas,
yeah.
Normally what happens is a manager runs out and you try to separate
yeah.
things. He was in the middle of the pack punching guys.
Right,
sucker punching guys.
He said to me I'm not going to say who it was on the Blue Jays, but he knows him well. Said he's never had an original thought in his life. He just molds himself to whoever's nearest to him and sort of becomes that guy. So
he's got a future in broadcasting.
It's kind of his intellectual limitations. That's a kind of a new
apparently
diss in baseball,
little,
isn't it?
A little close to Reed Nate Odor a lot of the time. Yeah.
But he's just a jerk.
But what's it going to be like down there, you think, just to have – because, yeah, the whole punch happened and it was over a year ago. But, you know, people in Texas are still talking about it. We're still talking about it here. The Odor – throwing away that series, that's the last memory the Texas Rangers have at Rogers Center. Rougned Odor throwing the ball away and Josh Donaldson sliding home safely and the Blue Jays moving on to the ALCS. So what are you expecting this weekend?
I think there's too much. The Texas got off to a terrible start and then got really hot, right, and got back into it. They're kind of the model for what the Jays have to do here. So, you know, there's two teams that You know, they're in a tough division with Houston. The Jays are in a situation where they've got to get back in it. And I think it's going to be pretty baseball-y, Mike. You know, like, again, maybe some stuff will happen, but I think both these teams are really interesting. It's been an odd first 2 months of the season for a lot of teams in baseball. You know, there's some good teams that have not played well, and there's some teams like Minnesota and, you know, Milwaukee. We just saw unexpectedly good starts by teams that you got to wonder if they're sustainable or not. But, you've got Donaldson and Tulowitzki coming back tomorrow, you've got this, you know, kind of a little bit of kind of creeping optimism around the Blue Jays right now, I would say. You know, weirdly enough, for a team that's five games under 500, there is a sense that no one's running away. Other teams are struggling in the division. They've got a chance. I would just think the extracurriculars aren't going
to
happen.
Yeah, I don't think anybody wants to see Troy Tulowitzki or Josh Donaldson getting into a fight with anybody. The only thing I will say is Jose Bautista's hitting some home runs. And if he hits a couple of home runs in this series and Sunday rolls around, I absolutely think Texas will throw at him.
Yeah.
Based on the jackass quota that we haven't.
There's
the
a
Texas
large
Rangers
jackass quota.
There really
the Texas
is.
Rangers
yeah, there is.
Yeah.
So I can see that happening.
Fair enough. All right. So on to the subject of Jose Bautista. They were talking about Devin Travis earlier. Travis and Bautista are both hitting about 420 over the last 2.5 weeks. Bautista has 6 of his 8 home runs from May 10th on, and he's got an OPS over 1,300, and Travis's is over 1,100 over that time. He's got 10 doubles in that span. First week of May, people were calling me and probably calling you guys too, saying Bautista's got to be move down to 7th, or put him on the bench, or release him. He's terrible. He's hitting 160 with only 2 home runs. The power's gone. He's old. It's over. I got the same phone calls about Troy Tulowitzki a year ago. Tula wound up turning it on and having a very good season. Your thoughts, gentlemen, on Jose Bautista and what we've seen in the last 2.5 weeks relative to what we saw last year and the first 5 weeks of this year.
I was going to say that, you know, to be fair, it's not just this year, right? It was the end of last year, especially, that Bautista also looked like that. So the notion,
not as bad as he looked at the beginning.
No,
of this
not
year.
As bad, but that sense that there were, you know, that there were bat speed issues with him, that maybe he wasn't that his approach was starting to change because he understood that he was diminished in a certain way. You know, I think that
I think it was legit. One leg too last year.
I know, but I'm not sure that wasn't legit the way he looked the first 5 weeks of the season or whatever. So, and you know, given his age, given the way players now age, kind of normally in the post PED era, the notion that he'd fallen off a cliff wasn't totally far fetched, right? He's not 28, but. You know, and I would say, the other thing I would say is, you know, this is a guy who the organization brought back reluctantly. There was no appetite to bring him back. You talk about ownership. I think that's a place where ownership weighed in the end and said, bring this guy back. He's sitting out there. He's available. The fans like him. I think there were, for a bunch of reasons, they were not super excited about bringing Jose back. But I guess the one thing I would say with both guys, when we talk about Travis and about Bautista and about them turning on, it's not like Ezekiel Carrera suddenly turned into a great hitter for a month, because if he did, you'd say, well, that's not sustainable, because he's not. But these guys, you know, we've seen Devin Travis through long stretches when he's been healthy with the Jays look like this, and we've seen Jose Bautista for a huge stretch of his career look like this. So I don't think you're going too far out on a limb to think that this could be sustainable for those two guys this year.
There are two things I thought of when I was looking at Jose Bautista. The first is, he is old. Nobody wanted him in free agency. And the team that eventually signed him didn't even really want him. So I'm sitting there thinking to myself, a lot of people don't think this guy's got a lot left in the tank. But then I watched him play the outfield. And he's playing better defensively than he's played in the past couple of years. I think he's playing better defensively than 2 years ago. And that kind of gave me pause to think. Was it just a matter of having to wait longer for this guy's bat to come around? And, you know, every spring training we say, we're not going to read anything into spring training. We're going to be patient. We're going to give these guys time to find their sea legs, yada, yada. And then we never do that. We always get excited about spring training. And when a guy has a bad month, we say, that's it, he's washed up. I think on balance, there was reason to suspect that Jose Bautista's career was over. But at the same time, as I said, just watching him in the outfield, this guy isn't carrying himself and playing defensively like a guy who thinks his career is shot.
Didn't you think, though, Jeff, it was almost more concerning the fact that his legs were back and he was in great shape because he was and he was healthy,
you know,
and, he still wasn't hitting?
Yeah, you know, I think we really don't know what to make of the World Baseball Classic and what impact the extra 2 weeks in spring training have on a player. I don't think there's anecdotal evidence that guys come out of the World Baseball Classic and it takes them a while to get going. There's anecdotal evidence that guys come out of the World Baseball Classic, hit the ground running, and look like all-stars. So I think it's kind of, and I'm going to remind myself this the next time the World Baseball Classic rolls around, unless somebody has an outbreak of common sense and kills the damn thing. But I'm going to remind myself the next time it comes around that I'm not going to read anything into anything any player does for the first month of the season, because these guys are such creatures of habit, and they've got, especially now with sports science, they've got so much of their day down to a, you know, to the half hour. I'm doing this at 3 o'clock. I'm doing this at 3:30. At 4 o'clock, I'm doing this. I think something like the World Baseball Classic interferes with that, so I think you just have to be a little more patient. You know, like I say, we always remind ourselves to do that, and we never do it.
You know, the other part of that is that
I do.
You got to, and I know Mike reminds his listeners of this all the time, but you have to kind of let baseball happen, right?
Yeah.
162 games is different. And, you know, it's hard sometimes to sit back and say, well, it's early. That that the story is not written yet. That, you know what, Milwaukee probably isn't going to finish ahead of the Cubs.
Will make the playoffs.
Cubs are probably going to make the playoffs, and you know Boston's probably going to figure things out a little bit, and Minnesota's probably going to come back to earth a little bit. And which is why it's kind of a folly sitting there saying, well, you know, it's the end of May, and these guys are going to have to play 625 baseball in order. But it happens, right? It happens. It doesn't happen. Teams that are 51-51 sometimes have a crazy August and they end up in the postseason.
And I think the other thing to keep in mind about this year in particular is you take a look around the American League East, and we talked about this yesterday. Going into yesterday's game, everybody in the American League East was 5-5 in their last 10 games, except Baltimore. They were 3-7. It's a bad division this month. And I think this division's worse than it was last year. So I'm looking at the Jays' record right now, and in a lot of ways, I kind of feel better about the Jays where they are right now, especially with Tulowitzki and Donaldson coming back, than I did with the Jays last year. Last year, everything went right for this team for the most part. Everybody stayed healthy. They had some bullpen issues, but everybody stayed healthy, and they were basically where they are right now. So I think the division's weaker, and the team's essentially where it was last year, and it hasn't had its full lineup together. So I kind of feel more optimistic about this team than I did last year's.
That's interesting. I we think immediately 2-11 and everything is horrible and terrible and you can never recover from that. But they're doing a very good job, and they've done it without most of their really, really good players. And it does again show the let baseball happen idea, because people couldn't wait to say the season was over after less than 2 weeks. And a lot of people who should know a lot better were doing it too. I want to ask, before we open it up to Q&A, I just want to ask about left field, because left field this year was supposed to be Steve Pearce. And then Steve Pearce got off to the terrible start, and now he's hurt, and he's not going to be back probably for over a month if you look at the Josh Donaldson timeline with the same injury, though Pearce does not have mutant huge calves like Donaldson does.
And Ross Atkins yesterday sounded a little more bright about
Pearce. Donaldson a week out, too.
Yeah,
right?
I know, but he was kind of, yeah, okay.
Donaldson can't buy pants at a regular place. His calves are so big.
But, let me get started with the calves thing.
It's true. No, this is, he told me he can't buy pants at a normal store.
Yeah, I call BS in that.
Anyway.
Doesn't even have the biggest calves in the clubhouse.
He could wear like jeggings. I'm sure that would be fine.
Capris.
Yeah. But left field, again, it was supposed to be Pearce. It sort of turned into Carrera, and Carrera did a good job for a month, but he's turned into a pumpkin, as he always does when you play him too much. I think he's 3 for his last 34 or something like that, which is Goinsian numbers. But at some point in time, you would think they're going to have to find somebody. Chris Coughlin, for me, is not a bad option. He's a... over the course of his career, he's been a very good hitter against right-handed pitching, and he's been a solid corner outfielder, much better than he is an infielder. And we saw why, right? We saw him butcher stuff at second and third nonstop. So for me, I don't mind if Coughlin kind of settles into that. You're going to need a right-handed complement. But do you guys see that as an answer? Or for this team, when it's time to make that push, are they going to really need to make a move and get a real left fielder?
It's the obvious play still, isn't it? But we were talking about this. Like, Steve Pierce healthy would be, and he was starting to show signs. He's, you know, he is a really good offensive player. I know we haven't seen much of it in Toronto, but the fact
maybe that... Maybe a better complementary player than an everyday player.
Well, who was it that's told us... Dan Duquette, right? We were said if you asked if, you know, Steve Pierce is great, but if you ask him to play more than 110 games, he gets hurt. Yeah. You know, and that's, well, he has. And that is his history. And I know, you know, that I think Mark Shapiro's line or Ross's line was that if he was a guy who had stayed healthy, he's a $20 million player. So somewhere in between those two things, right? So he's a $20 million player if he could play 150 plus games, but he never does. So, what do you do with 100 games of Steve Pierce? I think it was a good signing, and I understand what they saw in him. And if he could be something like your everyday left fielder, I think he would be a very good option. He's not a great defender, but he's a really good offensive player, and he's better than Coughlin. I still think that's the obvious place, though, if you're going to strengthen this team. But we'd have said that in January too.
Yeah, I mean, last year they went out to get Melvin Upton Jr. with basically the same outfield they have right now. Now that didn't work out. But I think that's an indication of how concerned they were with the outfield. You know,
they had Saunders last year too.
I think
though.
Saunders was hurt. I think you're going to see another outfielder in here within 6 weeks before the trade deadline. I think they realize, especially if this team stays where it is, and I'm not saying they're going to go out and make a blockbuster, but I don't think. Let's put it this way: I don't think if we're having this discussion in 6 weeks' time, I don't think the left fielder of the Toronto Blue Jays is in the organization right now, whether it's on the major league payroll or in the minor leagues.
That's the other thing; they don't have an organizational option. You know, we got a little look of it at Anthony Alford,
Dwight Smith Jr.
Dwight Smith Jr. I think probably they would like to keep him in Buffalo, and I'm not sure that he projects as an everyday guy right now. Alford is really exciting, but he was supposed to be up here for 2 days and go back.
Now, the thing we don't really know is we know that Dalton Pompey is back playing, and at some point, I would think you've got to at least take a look at him.
If it continues like this, I think you do have to take a look at him. But
the other option is Ryan Goins in left field.
No, it's not.
No,
it's not.
Just saying.
It's not.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, the one
I'm
thing about saying. You know, one thing about just in Pompey is, you know, was on the 60 day, has a concussion, is in extended spring right now. But it's interesting because all the stuff that the Jays said about Anthony Alford when he came to the big leagues about not being afraid and stepping in were all of the things that they have not said about Dalton Pompey. Yeah. In fact, they were the opposite of what they would say privately. And it was interesting to hear all that makeup stuff about Alford because I couldn't help but think about Pompey when he was rushed, really, you know, to made the team out of spring training that year when all the rookies made it. And it was kind of like the anti-Pompey, the way they described him, wasn't it, Mike?
What I found was really interesting was that in the off season, oh, you got a whole pizza there just for you, huh? In the off season... And Blair mentioned it earlier. They were talking about how the Blue Jays needed to get younger. They need to get more athletic. They need to get more left-handed. Dalton Pompey has all those things, and they never mentioned him.
Yeah.
So for me, that was a telltale sign of what the organization thinks of him. We shall see. All right. Let's take some questions. We have a microphone and everything, so you don't have to shout. But we can. I think everybody can hear everybody anyway.
Yeah, I think we can do it mic-free.
So who's got something for the triumvirate here? Yes, in your racially insensitive sweatshirt.
Very nice. That's awful.
Sorry, it was sitting right there. I had to. Like this year? Okay, the question is, of all the pitching prospects in the system, who's the one that's most ready to come up? For me, it's TJ House, who's not one of the Blue Jays prospects in the system. But look, you got Sean Reed Foley and Connor Green at AA, right? These are the two top pitching prospects in the system. Reed Foley has been getting his ass kicked in AA. He's starting to come around now, but I think after his first seven starts, he had an ERA of 8, and his WHIP was over 2. So he was having a lot of trouble adjusting to the level. So I think he's going to be a while. He's only 21, right? So he's probably a couple of years away. Green may be on a faster track.
But he scuffled too, Mike.
Yeah, but you know what he did? 2 starts ago, he put a 103 up on the scoreboard, which is very exciting. Yeah. It doesn't mean anything, but it's a lot of fun.
Pat Henkin said 2 years ago about Connor Green, said, I've seen him pitch. He's got a fastball that nobody can hit, and nobody swings at any of his other pitches.
Yeah, and we saw in spring training, and the his point 99s is, and 100s were getting squared up.
Exactly. The point is, bring that up to the major leagues, you're not going to last.
I think it's look and it's
I think he's going to be I think at some point he's going to be the he's going to be in the bullpen and I think at some point the organization maybe even this year is going to have to bite the bullet and say that's another power arm for the bullpen.
I think he's going to get dealt because somebody else is going to like him more than they do. That's what I actually think is going to happen with him. But look, there's at the moment if you look at the system and you know you can look down into kind of it's you know it's hard to make reads on guys in low A and things like that, but. You know, there aren't any Aaron Sanchez's or Noah Syndergaard's or Roberto Osuna's out there right now in this system, pitching-wise. It's we're at a rare point in Blue Jays' recent history where the most exciting prospects are position players. Yeah. So, and that's, you know, that's a big, it's, you know, it's a good thing because they haven't produced a lot of position players in the system. But, I don't think either Reed Foley or Connor Green are sure things.
But if Green does get dealt for help this year, then, again, that for me, like you look at top 10 prospect lists, maybe 3 of them will make it and maybe 1 will be a star. So if you can get legit major league help for 4 or 5 of them, as long as you deal the right 4 or 5, I think that's the way to go with your minor league system. They're more commodities than guys who are going to help you.
You know, I guess Pilar, except, but he was, I know where he was drafted.
Yeah.
You know, Aaron Seabee was a highly touted guy. You know?
Aaron Hill.
But Vernon Wells, but
you're right.
Yeah.
But I don't get why this is bad because, you know, and I understand it's a different animal, but the New York Yankees from 19, you know, they brought up their core 4 in 96, right? Derek Jeter and Bernie Williams, Posada. They didn't develop a single position player for the next 15 years.
They didn't have
not one. I know, it's a different animal, right? But because they could just go out and buy whoever they wanted. But when you draft pitching, which is what the Jays did a lot.
I was going to say, was drafting philosophy as part of this, right?
And because you feel like you can always turn an arm into a bat or two. So that and that's the thing. It's trading these minor league players. I don't have a problem with the fact that Devin Travis wasn't developed by the Blue Jays, or that Jose Bautista wasn't developed by the Blue Jays, or that Josh Donaldson wasn't developed by the Blue Jays. None of that matters. They traded 4 guys that they did draft and develop, well, 3 plus Brett Laurie, to get Josh Donaldson. Wouldn't you rather have that kind of thing happening?
If you go back to J.P. Ricciardi's tenure with the Blue Jays, J.P. Ricciardi measured success by how many guys he drafted who got up to the major leagues.
With whomever they got
didn't
up
matter.
There with.
And that was his philosophy. They drafted Russ Adams because they knew Russ Adams was going to be up in the majors quicker than some other options. Sean Markham, guy they drafted, got up to the major leagues. Aaron Hill got up to the major leagues.
They actually had the most players.
They had the most
the
players
leagues.
In the major leagues. At one point, not that long ago, when JP was at the
like
end of his tenure, they had put more players in the major leagues than any other organization of baseball. Now, 1 or 2 of them were good and the rest were. But that was how, at that time, with that payroll structure, and keep in mind, that was when the Blue Jays were slashing payroll, that's how they judged success. Then you got to Alex Anthopoulos, and I mean, I love Alex, but a lot of Alex's draft strategy was just throw stuff against the wall. And they misplayed their hands with a couple of picks.
Deck McGuire was a bad one.
McGuire was a bad one. Jane Paxton, I mean, they completely botched that up.
That was Beeston,
that
not
was
Alex.
Paul Beeston who botched that up.
Paxton, yeah,
from
BC.
From BC.
He pitches for Seattle now.
So, you know, I know there's this cult of Alex out there. Alex's drafting was okay, but it wasn't great. They've changed a little bit in the past
They went.
Yeah, they changed a lot of that. Daniel Norris,
yeah,
was out of high school.
I say they went back and forth on that. The previous administration,
and that was JP's idea about drafting college players was, I'd rather get somebody who's 20 years old, and I can get up to the majors in 2 years, than somebody who's 18, and I'm going to have to wait for four.
Yeah, I think JP liked a lot of low risk, low ceiling guys.
Yeah.
Rather than high risk, high ceiling. But yeah, they've drafted Joe Musgrove out of high school. They drafted Daniel Norris out of
high
school.
Was Jake Marisnik a high school pick? Was with Houston?
I don't think so because he got up quick. So okay. No. But there's a bunch. Daniel Norris was a high school pick and the most highly touted high school pitcher that there was that year. And they got David Price for him. And again, you know, they got, I go back to the Donaldson trade. Kendall Graveman was a pitcher they drafted. Sean Nolan was a pitcher.
Franklin Barreto is the guy they gave up in the Josh Donaldson deal. He's going to be a hell of a player.
International signing there. Yeah,
yeah, he's an international signer, but he's going to be a hell of a player.
But you look and they drafted the trades that destroyed the farm system, right? Where they traded 16 minor leaguers to get Price, Tulo, Revere, Mark Lowe, and LaTroy Hawkins. 13 of them were pitchers that they had drafted. And that they turn into real players. Who's next? In the back. Hey, shut up. Oh, it's okay. Well, thank you. Yes, sir. I don't know what A has to do with B, but I think for the most part they like each other a lot. And I think I need to say that the age of the players is really overstated. Like, yeah, they're the oldest team in the major leagues, but they're the oldest team in the major leagues by a month. And there's another one 3 months younger than them, and another one 5 months younger than them, right? So, The chemistry is always generally, like, there's been one time, I think, in the last 5 years where it's been a real issue and there have been these big corners of the clubhouse that can't stand each other. You know, it's 25 guys. You go to work with 25 people. You're not going to like everybody. You're not going to hang out with everybody. And there are going to be some real jackasses in there. I don't think there are very many real jackasses in this room, and that's a good thing.
I'm gonna do a little survey here. Everybody here remembers Omar Vizquel. Is he going into the Hall of Fame? First ballot Hall of Famer? You'll see where I'm going. Is he going to go into the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
All right. He was with the Blue Jays for a year. What do you remember about Omar Vizquel? He was brought in to be a character guy. He was going to help the young guys.
A coach on the bench.
Where was he when Yunel Escobar went out in the field with the homophobic slur on his
right
iPad?
Right beside him.
Omar Vizquel, who everybody said was going to come in and he was going to be just magic for clubhouse chemistry and teach this young team what it was like to be a pro, was the last guy to show up every day and the first guy out of there.
And so, a coach killer, too.
He would blame
the coaching staff for stuff.
You know what? On a bad team, chemistry usually sucks. On a good team, it's remarkable how many times people will turn the other way when somebody's a jackass.
But, you know, the other thing, and Mike, you're around these guys every day. The fact that they held, like, there were, if things were going to start coming apart, the first 6 weeks of the season would have been a pretty good time for it to happen, mm-hmm. right? And it didn't.
Yeah, and Jose Bautista was hitting 130, and that's when you would expect him to be at his prickliest and most miserable. And, you know, somehow they kept winning.
Yeah, there's some edgy personalities in that clubhouse, but it seems to function pretty well because the manager lets the guys take care of the stuff that needs to be taken care of, which is the same thing Terry Francona does in Cleveland. I mean, you look at the Red Sox teams, Terry Francona, they were lunatics. And they won World Series. Terry let the players handle most of the issues, and Gibbons is like that. So.
Didn't end well there, but...
No, it didn't. But as it usually happens in Boston, at some point, management decides they need to knife you in the back to get you out. And that's what happened to Terry Francona.
Yeah.
Who is still the best manager in baseball by a million miles.
All right, I'll give you that.
Editorial comment.
Yes. They did. They offered him more money than anybody else did. Because his agent is an idiot. I think everybody screwed up, to be honest with you. I think there was a tremendous amount of screwing up on all sides of that equation. I don't know whether Edwin's agent, and you know him much better than I do, and you know Edwin from doing the sit-downs, but I mean, I don't know if Edwin's agent didn't believe them when they said, if you don't take this, we're moving on pretty quickly. I think
Mike, everybody thought the market was going to a different place.
Like, yeah. Everybody. Yeah.
So Edwin and his agent and the Jays all assumed that he was going to get what he wanted, which was $100 million.
Right. See, I'm going to be accused here of being a company shill, but I think this is like 99% on Edwin. There's no reason, there was no reason for Edwin and his agent to say in spring training that we're not going to negotiate this year. It was just a stupid idea. And I understand the agent said that, well, I know my player and my player doesn't want to be. Well, bull. You negotiated a contract for him in the middle of the season 3 years before. Edwin was fine. The fact that Edwin isn't with the Blue Jays, to me, is almost entirely at the doorstep of him and his agent. If they wanted to stay here, they would be here. I absolutely believe that. And I know people are going to say that, well, the Blue Jays, they tried to leverage that window of opportunity. That's bull as well. I mean, at any point last season, Edwin, his agent, could have gone to the Blue Jays. At any point. So I'm just saying keep that in mind. If Edwin really wanted to be here, he would have had a contract done by the end of the year. That's my opinion.
Our host has a question. Yes. Yeah, it does. A serious conversation does have to happen with Josh Donaldson, but the problem is that Josh Donaldson is going to go into free agency at 32. And that's a big problem. So if he's going to want 5 years, he's going to want somebody to pay him a crap load of money through his age 37 season. And he was a late bloomer, fine. He doesn't have as much mileage on him as, say, a Bryce Harper will at that age or somebody else like that. But I don't think there's any way that the Blue Jays want to give Josh Donaldson $30 million to play at 37 years old.
Yeah, someone will give it to him, but it doesn't make sense.
I wonder, too, though, with that market, that year, the way it's going to be, there's going to be tons of money thrown around.
But you know what's going to happen? There are going to be teams left standing
right
without the guy, and they may look at Josh Donaldson and go,
budgeted for a lot of money.
You know what? We can't get Bryce Harper. We can't get Manny Machado. You figure if a team is interested in one of those two guys, they're going to think that they have a shot of winning. So that team may go, you know what, let's talk to Donaldson, maybe give him 3 years or 4 years. To answer your question as far as the Blue Jays go, I don't think there's a chance that he's back here. I wouldn't be surprised if he's dealt in the offseason. No, I think they're not, especially with the way the free agent rules are now. He's not going to leave Toronto as a free agent. He'll be traded before he leaves as a free agent.
Yeah, because of because they won't get the compensation.
It's only a 2 and a 5 now, if you trade him mid-year, you don't get it. But it'll be interesting, because will they trade him this offseason? Will they wait till the deadline next year and get a lot less for him? Will they try to negotiate something? If I'm Josh Donaldson, I'm not signing an under-market deal to stay with the Blue Jays. This is his one shot. This is it. This is going to be like, some guys will get two, some will even get three. He's getting one. And so he's going to have to try to maximize that money as much as he possibly can. And there's no way that happens without going out on the market.
No, and he's going to, no, look, and I no one can blame him, and I hope he gets paid. But, you know, the rules, you can't pay guys for what they've done. You have to pay them for what they're going to do. You know, and it's a tricky business when you have a sentimental attachment to a player who's been with the team, who's done great things for that team. You know, we went through this with Edwin to a degree, and with Bautista, where you just say, well, they've been so great, you know, that you want to reward them and keep them around. But you have to make a very cold-blooded calculation about guys in their mid-30s and say, you know, there's a curve here. And you start going down the other side of the curve, and do we want to – and the market, you know, their value is determined by the fact that they're free, that they're available.
The other thing is – it doesn't end well in Toronto. Carlos Delgado, Roy Halladay, doesn't end well here. Robbie Alomar, doesn't end well here. For whatever the reason, when it comes to the Blue Jays and it comes to their franchise players, it doesn't end well. And I think this will be another example where, I don't know if you'd call trading Josh Donaldson not ending well, But I just don't see any interruption in that trend.
We'll see. I mean, the fact that that's happened before doesn't mean it's going to happen again. But
it's happened enough.
But we'll see. Who's next? Yes. He's a free agent at the end of the season. I think.
There's a team
I don't
option,
think
right?
there's yeah. any yeah. way that
Mutual option.
They yeah. get to that middle of the road place where the team wants him back at that figure and he also wants to come back at that figure. I think that it's almost automatic. You have a mutual option, that means you're a free agent.
Yeah, I don't think there's any chance of him. Japan.
Well, it depends how the next 4 months
Korea. Yeah. Yeah, let's see how the year
ends. Somebody will take a shot. You know what? One of the things he did well this year, one of the things his agent attempted to do this year, I can't really say they did well, but you know, they realized that the market was shifting, and they realized that they couldn't approach teams from the point of view of, I'm Jose Bautista, home run champion, multiple all-star, MVP candidate, slugger, you need to sign me. They were approaching teams with, hey, this is a guy with a good track record. He'll play first base for you if you want, play a little bit of third base for you if you want. I mean, they didn't say he's the Latino Ben Zobrist, but they were kind of, that was the way it was being pushed. This, you know, you're getting a guy who's willing, whatever you guys want to do, you want him to DH, he's willing to do that. Want him to spend time in different positions, he's willing to do that. If he has a good 4 months, he'll find, somebody will give him a year and an option or a two-year contract to be that guy.
Well, he's not, though. I mean, and you know what? A lot of times you sign the hated guy and you start to love him. But there is a road that brings him back to Toronto. It's just for less money. If you know, and again, it depends on the kind of season he has, right? There's still 117 games left to play, so we have to see how that works. Someone just said, does he have a batting coach in his future?
Good Lord.
I don't know why he would, having made his $100 million, come back and ride buses and coach in the majors. Yes, sir.
I keep thinking to a conversation we had with Mark Shapiro in spring training, and he talked about there are some guys who just go to the World Baseball Classic and just blossom. Victor Martinez, was it? No. I'm talking about the Indians. Brain fart. Martinez Santana. One of them went to the World Baseball Classic and came back. And Shapiro mentioned him, came back and said it was like a different guy. He'd gone and played with the Dominican Republic.
Must be Santana.
Yeah, and he came back, and it was like you could just see that this guy had grown, that he'd been accepted by his peers. And Shapiro's point of view or point was he thought Marcus Stroman was kind of cut out of the same cloth, that going there on the big stage, doing what he did, was going to be the type of thing that would just kind of propel his career. And knowing the kind of guy Marcus is, I absolutely think that something like that would have a positive impact on him.
He has rather strong sense of self-belief. And he's got a great big chip on his shoulder, and it drives him. You know, like, it's like, look, you talk to him much, Mike?
Yeah, he actually, we talk a lot, and Marcus.
Oh, bull.
It's true. He's, for some reason, the chip on his shoulder has not extended to me.
Well, that's understandable. I'd make an exception for you, too.
Yeah, well, why wouldn't you, right? But yeah, he does pitch with people hate me as his motivation, or people think I can't do it, or you know, and the World Baseball Classic is a big example of that, right? You go out there in championship game and take a no-hitter into the seventh inning. It was a huge moment for him. He hasn't been what I hoped he'd be so far this season. I don't think he's gone six innings in any of his last three or four starts since that tightness thing in New York happened. But he's still, I really think, I mean, he's the guy I would start in a huge game.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, he has been Marco Estrada.
Over Marco Estrada?
Flip a coin between them. But yeah, yeah, Estrada's
a two-sided coin.
Estrada has had some of the best playoff starts in this team's ever had, and so has Stroman.
Yeah.
You had something, sir. One of you guys answer that one.
Because
I don't know.
The Yankees in the past couple of years have actually been very conservative with free agents. I mean, they get their money. They get their money from ownership. They're got, you know, it's a private ownership group. They're not publicly owned. They don't have to list themselves on the stock exchange. If Brian Cashman can make the case, he gets money. You know, people talk about the Yankees rebuilding. You know, let's keep in mind that, yeah, they've got a good young team right now. They've also got the third highest payroll in baseball. You know, they had an exciting young team last year. They had the second highest payroll in baseball. I mean, it's not like these guys are stripping down to $40 million and then building up. So that covers up a lot of mistakes. That allows you to sign a Jacoby Ellsbury. That allows you to basically carry Mark Teixeira, you know, for a year and a half of his career. But in terms of revenue streams, the biggest difference between the way, at least I see it, and Steven, you can talk to this at least as well as I can. The biggest difference between the Blue Jays and other teams is that the Blue Jays are owned by a publicly traded company. Now, that doesn't mean that shareholders, you know, get up in arms every time a deal is made. But, you know, I always use the example. B.J. Ryan, when the Blue Jays brought out B.J. Ryan's contract, there was a little line in the Rogers quarterly report that all the investors got that listed a one-time payment of $18.5 million to whatever the hell B.J. Ryan's name is, whatever the, for, you know, his legal name was. So that's the biggest difference, is Rogers is a publicly traded company that happens to own a baseball team. The Yankees are owned by a family that owns a baseball team and has a bunch of other industries.
Yeah, and that's a huge difference. You know, it. So they have to be accountable to their shareholders,
yeah,
right? So you have to justify what you do. Now, the Jays are spending about $160 million this year,
mm-hmm,
which is the highest payroll in the history of the team, which would reflect the very high revenue that, you know, and again, it's there are checks and balances in terms of, because Rogers owns the TV network that is paying for the content, you know, it's, there's a kind of a left-hand, right-hand thing, but they're supposed to pay something according, you know, that reflects fair value, that the team is supposed to get fair value.
Yeah, and their network TV contract is in Canadian dollars, such as it is. They take in Canadian dollars mostly for revenue in terms of attendance and stuff at the ballpark.
But the one thing is, you know, that I know, like, baseball won't allow publicly traded companies to own teams anymore. It's been grandfathered, so that's not going to happen anymore. And the tricky part, especially from if you're Mark Shapiro, is that, and you guys know this mostly, but public companies operate on a quarter to quarter basis. You can't operate a baseball team on a quarter to quarter basis. It's really hard to do, because for all kinds of variables, and you're trying to work through 2 year and 3 year and 5 year cycles, and you're building towards things, and that means some years you're going to spend a lot more, and some years your revenues are going to go in a certain place. And, you know, so it's hard to do that. And, of course, the other thing is you can't spend romantically, right? You can't have an owner who just says, I want to, you know, Mike Ilitch in Detroit, right, who just wanted to win a World Series before he died. That public companies don't operate that way.
Derek Jeter doesn't happen in Toronto.
No.
They don't decide, yeah, you know, Derek, boy, captain of the team, will give him $20 million.
So, I think there's a lot of people who would argue that given the market size and given the revenue that the Jays drive, that they could spend more. And I think that's a legit argument, mm-hmm, that they could spend up to the, what's the $180 million, what's the ceiling?
Yeah,
the
like
new
187 or something,
yeah,
luxury tax.
That they could creep up to the luxury tax threshold for sure, and maybe they will. But, you know, if you're running the team, that's an argument you have to go and make to the board, again, who are trying to justify it. Now, in terms of the company Rogers, this is like a fly on an elephant. The Blue Jays are a small line item in that company, but you still have to justify what you do there.
And it's remarkable how a little fly can bug an elephant.
Yeah.
You ever seen an
elephant?
Ain't
that true? Ain't that the truth?
It really is.
It is really something, because you think of the Blue Jays as a rounding error, right, on the Rogers annual report. But and it is for the whole company, but the company is divided in such a way that it's media and the Jays are in that. It has nothing to do with wireless. Has nothing to do with cable. Has nothing to do with those huge money makers.
I'm just going to say there's also a profile aspect too, because when Paul Godfrey was president and CEO here, remember the fuss the Jays announced? They'd lost $75 million. I mean, you know, the waves that created. The Rogers office, you know, $75 million is like, I wouldn't call it a rounding error, but in terms of what Rogers does, it's not that big. But man, if you're a Rogers a major shareholder or a board member, you pick up the paper, you go, holy shit, we lost $75 million. I mean, that's there's a kind of a, I don't know what you call it. Not a
chilling effect.
Yeah.
In the shareholders.
There's kind of a profile issue. Oh.
Anybody
chilling
over
effect.
Here?
I like
yes,
the chilling
sir.
Effect. That's good.
I think in the playoffs, yes. I don't think that can be sustained in the regular season. And in the regular season, the Blue Jays have today off and they had Monday off. So this is like 40% of their off days this month were this week. And they just had a run of 36 games in 37 days or whatever it was. So I don't think you can do that. In the playoffs, the Jays played 7 games in 15 days. So you can abuse your relievers like that. I believe that with, you know, the analytics creep and all of this stuff, the new information that's being found out all the time, there will be a GM or a manager who at some point in time says, our starting pitchers are never going to face a hitter a third time. However that goes, whether you're in for 3 innings or whether you're perfect
Tampa
through
Bay
6.
Almost did that.
Yeah, they 2 came
years
close,
ago.
Right?
Almost.
Our starting pitcher's never going to see a batter a third time, and we're going to work our bullpen and do it like that. But I don't think we're going to see a 140-inning reliever.
You know what? I don't think we're going to see a 140-inning reliever, but I think we're going to see 2 100-inning relievers in the same team. We're going to see it this year. The Cincinnati Reds are coming into town next week. They have deliberately decided that they are going to have 2 100-inning relievers this year, Iglesias and the other guy. I mean, this was said in spring training by Brian Price that, you know, no, you're right. You can't use Andrew Miller in the regular season the way you can use him in the playoffs, but you can use Andrew Miller A and Andrew Miller B during the regular season. And I think that's where it's going, is you are going to see teams that we haven't had. I think we looked at this. I don't know if any team, if there have been 2 100-inning teams with 100-inning relievers. I mean, I think 1993 was the last time we saw that. And you're going to see that this year. And I think that's where it's going, is you're going to see teams.
But I still think that managers are always going to want to hold their best guy back, right? Because if they use their best reliever to get out of a bases-loaded jam in a one-run game in the seventh inning, which is smart, but then they got to go to Kevin
Gregg.
You
want to
have
two guys who were really good.
You want to have three.
You want to have two guys who
were
really good.
You need to have three.
Well, two guys that were really good.
But, you know, one of them is not going to be available one day. And if you want to run your bullpen like that, you've got to have a lot of guys who you can say, you know what, I went to that guy in the seventh, and I trusted this guy in the ninth, and you're not going to get strung up when the guy blows it.
And you know what, it doesn't matter how you plan it. Every team's going to need a Danny Barnes. Every team that succeeds has a guy in the bullpen at the end of the year. You go, where the hell did that come from? And that's just the way it is. But teams like Cincinnati, Houston, Mike Devinsky, you know, the way Houston's using him, Chris Devinsky, the way Houston's using him. Yeah, I think a lot of people are more open to using the bullpen in more creative ways now than they have in the past. Right. You know where I think the real issue is? It's not so much that. It's you've got two relievers. Relievers get paid for saves for the most part. And now you got one guy saying, okay, wait a minute here. I'm looking at this guy, and he's got 27 saves, and I'm pretty good. I'm almost as good as him. I got 14 saves. How's that going to look in arbitration? I think that's going to be a bigger issue. And actually, and Terry Francona talked about when he was here, we're talking about using Andrew Miller, one of the things he mentioned is there's also an economic aspect to this. He said, one of the reasons I can do that with Andrew Miller is because he's under contract for next year. So I can go to him and say, hey, you're going to get your pay next year, whether I use you the sixth, seventh, second, fourth, fifth inning. You got a contract. He said, I couldn't do that if the guy was a free agent.
Right. Andrew Miller's already making closer money.
Exactly.
He was out on the free market as a closer.
Yeah.
All right, one more. Yes, ma'am. Oh, the no-pitch intentional walk? That's where we're going to go out on the no-pitch intentional walk.
I love it.
I think it's amazing that they're saving 23 seconds every three games.
I think it's great.
Well, I don't mind the pre-review review. For me, like, for me, an instant replay, first of all, let's say it right out. The no-pitch intentional walk is ridiculous as a time saver.
You're missing.
You can like
not,
it for
it's
what.
It's not a right, time saver. You're missing the bigger picture.
There's no bigger picture with that. You're saving 23 seconds every three
games. The bigger picture is that all the time-saving things baseball is going to do have to be collectively bargained.
Right. But they and threw in the no-pitch intentional walk and said, look how much time we're saving.
But let me finish. You can't go to the players and say, you know, we want you to move to the plate faster. We want you to take less time between pitches. We don't want you stepping up. At which point the players are going to go, okay, that's great. Well, you've got some pretty stupid rules. One of them is this four-pitch intentional walk. So essentially what the commissioner did this year, they got a lot of, they're getting some of the crap off the table before they go ahead and address the series. It's not a matter of saving 23 seconds. It's a matter of not... when you sit down to negotiate, not having that as a bargaining chip for somebody. It's just not that complicated.
It's not much of a chip.
Yeah, I don't think the players wanted no four-pitch intentional walk.
But again, when you get something off the table and remove it from negotiations, it's one less thing you have to worry about.
I'm skeptical. I don't know why that would ever have been brought to the table anyway. But to the instant replay thing, for me... The fact that instant replay, that asking for a replay review is a strategic thing, is a huge mistake. If replay is in there to get the calls right, that's what it should be in there for. And you have that 30 seconds because, well, let's make sure they blew the call before we ask them, and then we lose our challenge for later when they might screw up again. I think that every play should be reviewed. I think that there should be a fifth umpire upstairs who just looks at each play as it happens, without any change to what's going on the field. And if something looks a little like, all right, well, I need to take a closer look at that, he pushes a button, and there's like a little vibrating device that's implanted somewhere in the crew chief, and it buzzes. And so he calls time while this guy takes his 30 seconds to either say, yeah, I need to really look at it, or let's just go. And just take it right out of the manager's hands. Make sure you get as many calls right as you possibly can.
Yeah, other than home runs, I don't need instant replay. Sorry.
Well, all right.
I don't need it. I don't need instant replay at second base.
I just want games to be decided on merit. Wouldn't they be
kind of long, Mike?
No, I don't think there are that many plays.
I don't know about that.
Oh,
like,
God,
I think there'd be more than in the challenge system.
Maybe a couple, but I don't think too many.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think
definitely
too many.
More.
There are a lot of close plays, but not a lot of plays that
are reviewable.
I need to go frame by frame to see whether this guy blew it.
Okay.
I think that's it.
Kevin, we will disagree.
Kevin says we're done. Thank you all so much. Thank you for having us. We love coming out here.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
We love that you want
great.
Us out here. For Ali and Arden and Laura. Again, this is great, and we can't wait till we come back. Your first time, did you enjoy yourself?
I did enjoy myself. I knew I was going to enjoy myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, and they brought the magic.
The bags full of meat and cheese.
Bag of cheese. That's why we really come
here. I got to tell you, that bag of meat and cheese was a huge hit at the barbecue. The family barbecue for about 4 months, it was so big.